Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Judge David Iacobucci sees the contest 80-72, while judges Lawrence Cole and Jesse Reyes see it 79-73. Declaring your winner by unanimous decision, Jake Elgallo Paul!
Yeah, you hear the boos there when that is announced that Jake Elfrado Paul won that fight. Welcome into The Glass Half Full. I am Jordan Glass right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of today's show? 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. We're going to talk football for sure on today's Glass Half Full, but before we get into that, I had to talk about this masquerade that people tried to call a fight over the weekend on Netflix between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. And before we even get into the fight, let's sit here and talk about just how terrible the presentation was from Netflix. Like, really, you're going to have so many people tuned into your streaming service and you don't have it backed up and set and ready to go? So you're going to have people waiting and just sitting there watching a spinning wheel of death on their screen because your network is crapped out because it can't handle the overload of people watching. First and foremost, Netflix, shame on you. You should do better. Heck, you charge enough for your platform, you should be able to pay enough to where you can actually manage to handle that type of viewership for an event. But then also at the same time, control your cameraman, all right? Let them know that when you're filming an athlete in the locker room, you film from the shoulders up. We saw parts of Mike Tyson we didn't necessarily, actually not necessarily, no, it's flat out, we didn't need to see. Just double-cheeked up on a Friday night on Netflix, live in front of everybody and their mama. That's not okay. From the shoulders up when you're in the locker room. Come on, cameraman. We don't want to see that. We don't need to see it. That is for sure. Now, as far as the fight goes, getting into the actual fight itself, I was very frustrated when I saw the fight. Because seeing all the videos of Mike Tyson training leading into this, the speed was there. The power was there. It didn't matter that he was in his 50s. He was still Iron Mike Tyson. We watched training videos of him going, oh, he may actually send Jake Paul to the hospital because he hasn't really dropped off at all. And then he gets in the ring and it's completely different. He's standing there, barely moving, not trying to get out of the way of punches. That's one of the things that Mike Tyson was known for, is his ability to elude a punch and then just drop a hammer on your jaw. Right? That's why he was as good as he was, because you couldn't touch him. And now all of a sudden he's just standing there, taking hit after hit from Jake Paul. You're telling me all of the boxers that Mike Tyson has gone against in his career, Jake Paul's the one that's going to tag him the most? Uh-uh. No, I'm not buying it. I'm calling it now. This fight was rigged. This fight was a sham. This fight was a joke. It wasn't even a real fight. If you've not looked up the rules that were in the contract that Mike Tyson had to sign in order to do this fight, I urge you to go look it up. Because they literally had clauses in there that if Mike Tyson knocked out Jake Paul, it would affect how much he got paid. And not in like a, if you knock him out, you get extra, you get a bonus. That's how it should be. It's how it used to be. You know, you knock a guy out, hey, you got a little bonus. You got more money. Now, in this fight, if you want to call it a fight, they came out and they said, oh, well, if you knock him out, you're going to make significantly less money. And then on top of that, pretty much every rule other than that that was given was basically telling Mike Tyson, You can't be Mike Tyson. You've got to stand in the ring and just take it from Jake Paul. You've got to make Jake Paul look good. Because I'm going to tell you something. There was a couple of times where Mike actually tagged Jake Paul. And you could see the look on Mike's face look like he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar doing something he wasn't supposed to because of those rules that were placed on him in that contract. Literally, he gets more money if Jake Paul wins the fight than if he wins the fight. How does that work? That is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm not blaming Mike Tyson. I'm not blaming, you know, professional boxing. I'm not blaming anybody but Jake Paul for being a coward and a chicken because you want to get in the ring with somebody like that. Well, then you better stand toe-to-toe and actually fight them like a real man. Don't give them all these stipulations and rules that's going to limit their performance in the ring. You want to fight somebody like Mike Tyson? You want to fight somebody like Canelo? Stand toe-to-toe and fight them regular. Oh, wait, he won't do that because he knows he'll get exposed if he does. Absolutely ridiculous. And then on top of that, all the other BS aside from the rules, who picked the judges? Jake Paul. The judges that made the announcement, a unanimous decision announcement. I'm going to play it for you again. Here's the announcement of the decision on the fight on Friday night.
Judge David Iacobucci sees the contest 80-72, while judges Lawrence Cole and Jesse Reyes see it 79-73, declaring your winner by unanimous decision, Jake Elgato Paul!
Yeah, so that was the official announcement of the decision. And, of course, we're talking about the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight from Friday night right here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of the show, you can definitely do that. 850-623-1330. Again, that's 850-623-1330. Each and every one of those judges that sounded in favor of Jake Paul for a unanimous decision was picked by, you guessed it, Jake Paul. Jake Paul's a coward. He's a fake. He's a fraud. Next time you want to fight somebody like Mike Tyson or you want to fight somebody like Canelo, how about you get in the ring and you fight them toe-to-toe without giving them rules that basically tie both hands behind their back and actually have the Federation of Boxing or somebody that's a third party not involved in the fight pick the officials that are going to be judging the fight. Absolutely a joke on Friday night. Netflix, I hope you put the replay of this in the comedy section. That's where it belongs to go. Let's move now to the NFL here on the Glass Half Full. A couple of big shocking surprises yesterday. Obviously, the performance of the Falcons against the Broncos was surprising. But we'll start actually with the Chiefs as they dropped their first game of the season. 31-20 loss to Buffalo on the road in Buffalo. Both of these quarterbacks, I mean, you look at Patrick Mahomes, 23 of 33, 196 yards, 3 touchdowns. And 2 picks. Josh Allen, 27 of 40, 262 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Very similar numbers for both of these guys in this game. And I'm actually going to put an asterisk next to one of those interceptions for Patrick Mahomes because he's trying to score a touchdown late in the game. He's just heaving the ball downfield, and it gets picked off. That's something we see happen in just about any close game over the course of Saturday in college football and Sunday in the NFL. So I'm going to put a little asterisk next to that. So really, truthfully, Patrick Mahomes, one true interception in that game for me. But really, when I kind of look at this, it's the play of Josh Allen just in general, right? Not necessarily with his arm because, like I said, 1 touchdown, 1 passing touchdown, 1 interception. Not really an electric game for him. We've seen him play better. But it was that run, that 4th-and-2 run. About 2 minutes and 6 seconds left in the game? It is a 24-20 lead for the Bills. And, I mean, he just puts the game on ice with that 4th-and-2 run. Could have easily just picked up the first down and slid, but he saw the opening, and he was like, I saw somebody put this perfectly. They said Josh Allen refused to let this game be decided by a coin toss. And that's because against both the Ravens and the Chiefs, Josh Allen and the Bills have been burned before by letting a game go into overtime and they don't get a chance to score because either Lamar Jackson and the Ravens or Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs march down the field and they score a touchdown first. So Josh Allen, when he saw his opportunity, he took that thing full force. He didn't slide after he picked up the first down. He said, you know what? I got a chance of getting in the end zone for six and making this an 11-point game. I am going to do that. And kudos and credit to him. In a world where a lot of times quarterbacks are going to want to dive down and slide down to avoid the hit, he's welcoming the contact. And it's something we've seen from Josh Allen before. It's nothing new from him. He welcomes the contact. He wants you to hit him. Why? Because he's actually a big physical guy. Right? Josh Allen is not afraid of the contact. And because of that, the Bills were able to get the win yesterday over the Chiefs. Credit the Chiefs defense too, or excuse me, the Bills defense too. Outside of Xavier Worthy, I think he had a couple of touchdowns. Really, that was kind of it for the Chiefs offense. They were kind of pedestrian other than, you know, Xavier Worthy's, you know, play. I mean, again, Patrick Mahomes, how many times have we seen him hold under 200 yards passing in a ball game? So credit the Bills. They were ready to play for this game. They weren't going to let it be decided by a coin toss in overtime. Josh Allen made the big play on 4th-and-2 with 2 minutes remaining in the game. And now Buffalo 9-2, which is their best start since 1992. So this may be the year. Looking at this Bills team, we always talk about, can they get it done in the postseason? Can they make those plays in the postseason? If they play in the postseason like they did yesterday, yeah. And there's a very good chance we could be talking about the Bills in New Orleans in early February. So, who knows what's going to happen with Buffalo, but definitely a big win for them there over the Chiefs. 31-20 is the final in that one again. The Bengals, they come up just short. Man, you got to be sick if you're a Bengals fan. Just not just with last night's game, but just with the season in general. It's got to be one of those things where you just... Man, you just are sick to your stomach every time. Every time Sunday rolls around, you just get queasy when you wake up on Sunday morning. Because it's just, it's always so close. It's like that, you remember that, I think it was Geico, the Geico commercial, the old man had the fishing pole, and he had like the dollar on the end of it, and he'd be dangling, and he'd say, oh, you almost got it. You almost had it. That's how this year's been for the Bengals. You almost had it. Whether they have a lead and give up the lead or they have a fierce comeback in the second half like they did last night. I mean, they were down 21 points to start the second half. They battle back. They tie it up. It's 27-27. And I think the biggest thing in this, Evan McPherson, 2 missed field goals in that game, a 48-yarder and a 51-yarder. And before anybody goes, well, those are long field goals. That's pedestrian now for a kicker. You have to make those now to play in the NFL. Hey, you have to make those to play in college football now. Trey Smack for the Gators hit a 55-yarder like it was nothing over the weekend against LSU. And how many other kickers hit similar field goals over the weekend in the college level and in the NFL level? 48-yarder, 51-yarder, that's no longer a, wow, that's a really long field goal. That's a, okay, that's well within their range. So for Evan McPherson to miss not one but 2 of those late in the fourth quarter, I mean, he missed one less than 5 minutes left. The other one was less than 2 minutes left. You can't have that if you're the Bengals. You can't have those opportunities wasted like that. And that is the reason why they lost this game. They had 2 chances to take this win home. This game, honestly and truthfully, we should be talking about a 30-27 win by the Bengals in which they completely came back and dominated in the second half, and we should be talking about how the Chargers collapsed and lost a 21-point lead. But instead, because Evan McPherson missed both of those field goals, it opened the door back up for Justin Herbert, and this Chargers offense. And if you keep giving Jim Harbaugh enough chances, he's eventually going to make you pay. And that's exactly what happened last night. It's a sickening season if you're a Bengals fan. Just nothing seems to go right. You take two steps forward, and then you're taking about five backwards. It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Real quick before we head to break, want to talk about the Falcons because I mentioned them a moment ago. I don't know what is going on with Atlanta, but they've now lost two straight. It was a 20-17 loss on the road against New Orleans, and now they go to Denver. Honestly and truthfully, a game they should have won. And Kirk Cousins, I mean, the numbers aren't – it's not like it was a bad day at the office. He's had worse days on the field. 18 of 27, 173 yards. He did throw a pick. But like I said, he's had worse days on a football field. But on the other side, Bo Nix, my goodness, I just – have yourself a coming out party, young man. 28 of 33, 307 yards, four touchdowns through the air as the Broncos just absolutely rout the Falcons 38-6. Definitely surprised by the outcome of this game because when we were talking about these games Thursday of last week, I said I felt like the Falcons had a good opportunity to go on the road to Denver and get back on the winning track after that loss to New Orleans because of just the way they were playing football. And I thought they were a better team than the Broncos. But honestly and truthfully, the Broncos are playing really good football right now. I mean, they are playing – I mean, you look at it, even the week before, yes, they lost to the Chiefs, but it was 16-14, and it was 14-13 – heading into the final play of regulation, Kansas City hits a field goal to walk it off and win it 16-14. They legitimately had a shot at possibly being the first team to beat Kansas City a week ago. This Denver defense is playing aggressive, stingy defense, and they have been for the last I don't know how many weeks. I mean, you go back to their game against New Orleans in the Superdome, Sean Payton making his big return to face off against the Saints again. And that defense was just incredible for the Broncos. So, yeah, the defense has been playing great. And now if Bo Nix can continuously play at this level, man, watch out for the Broncos. All right? They could easily be a wild card team that slips in. What are they now, 6-4 with this win? Watch out for them. Could be very interesting if they continue to play the way that they've done the last few weeks. We'll take our first time out. When we come back, more of the glass half full right after this on ESPN Pensacola.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. So whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Monday morning, 9:22 here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Want to switch gears to some college football, but before we do that, some local sports to talk about happening over the weekend. We'll go to Saturday night first because that is where we had the Pensacola Ice Flyers. It was Star Wars night at the hangar, and lots of great Star Wars characters, great crowd out there at the hangar for the game. Looked like it was going to be a fun night, like the Ice Flyers were going to play really well and maybe get the win. Had a 3-1 lead heading into the final 20 minutes and just could not hold on to that. They ultimately end up losing to Huntsville 5-3. And obviously not the outcome in the start of the season that Coach Graham or anybody with the Ice Flyers would have wanted Got a chance to talk to him after the game and kind of talking to him about, you know, you're 2-7-1 on the season. What's kind of been those early season issues that you've seen from this team? And this is what Coach Graham had to say.
Well, just, you know, when you're, it's almost like I'm a therapist any more than a coach. You know, it's just, you know, you're trying to deal with so many guys that are trying to find their game, and you're trying to be patient with them, trying to communicate with them, trying to get their game going. But, you know, our goaltending has not been good. Defensively, we've allowed too many goals. We've struggled to score. Those are three awful combinations to have all at the same time. So, you know, the guys that we signed during the summer that I signed during the summer, frankly, there's no we, I signed them. So this all falls on my desk right now. So the record is my record. It's the guys that I signed during the summer, and I own that. The issue is that it's just we're struggling to get that identity. And tonight, you see a good example of us playing very good in two periods, and how do you play with the lead, right? Right away, you see early on in the period, key guys that are turning pucks over, making dumb plays that we didn't make in the first two periods when you have a lead. And it's just, they just haven't figured out how to learn from these mistakes. And you can show it in video. You can practice it all you want. You practice it over and over again. But again, you got guys on the ice that got to do a job, and they're not doing a job.
And it's, again, Coach Gary Graham, the head coach of the Pensacola Ice Flyers, on really why the season has been a struggle so far early on, 2-7-1 on the year. And like he said, there's just no team identity. They're still trying to kind of search for that and find that right now. And until they do, it's just going to kind of be the same. And like he was talking about in that clip, you know, you see them come out and they play really two good periods, and then it just trails off. So definitely some work to do with this Ice Flyer team. And again, lots of new faces for the Ice Flyers this year. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where this team still needs to kind of gel. They still need to come together. And, you know, they're working to do that. It's frustrating. I mean, it makes it worse, and it sucks when you're losing, you know. So the Ice Flyers internally, you know, it makes it harder to gel and become a more cohesive unit when you're going up against adversity week in, week out, game in, game out. But I think Coach Graham kind of has the right idea there of where he's wanting to direct and take the team. So we'll just have to continue to see how they improve. I know they're going to be on the road coming up this upcoming weekend against Peoria. So not only is that a rivalry game, but it's going to be against a pretty good team in Peoria. So a good chance for them to kind of right this ship and maybe start moving in the right direction with a big win this weekend on the road. As far as some high school football, you heard the game right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Tate, unfortunately, eliminated. Their season is done. Nice, a big win for them, 42-13, the final in that one. Really kind of my takeaways from being at this game and calling this game. First and foremost, thank you so much to Nice High School for being so accommodating to us and allowing us to travel down to their campus to call this game. Beautiful stadium. And, of course, if Nice sounds familiar, that is where Tim Tebow played his high school football. And I got to tell you what, beautiful facilities. They got, like, this big Golden Panther statue out front. They've got an elevator that goes up to the press box. It was nice. It was very first class. The field was well done. Beautiful facilities there. So again, thank you to everybody at Nice for having ESPN Pensacola down there. And shout out to Tate. Tate's been great to us all year. Each and every time we do the game, you know, they're always very hospitable. And once again, you know, appreciative that we were going on the road with them. So thank you to Tate. Thank you to Nice for everything for this game. But again, my takeaways for Tate in this game. Finishing drives was a big issue for them. They had three drives that ended on fourth down stops deep into Nice territory. I mean, you know, you give them three more touchdowns on the board and all of a sudden this is a ball game. Two of those fourth down stops deep in Nice's territory came in the first half. They went into halftime trailing 21-7. There's a legitimate shot that if Tate converts those fourth downs, goes on to score a touchdown, we're talking about a game that's 21-21 at the half, and who knows what happens in the second half. But their inability to finish the drive, they would get down there, they would stall out. I get why Coach Summerford is going for it on fourth down like he was in this game, because when you're going up against an offense like Nice and a team like Nice, they are scoring almost every possession. And I believe they did. I believe Nice only punted the ball once the entire game. So I get where Coach Summerford is coming from by going for it so much on fourth down. You've got to convert those, though, if you're the Aggies. And that was a big reason why they were down early and down so quick in this game. They just could not convert once they got down into Nice territory. That was a big issue for them. Now, while they're going to look back and they're going to watch this film, they're not going to be happy with what they see. I think overall on the season, if you're Coach Summerford, when you meet with your team to kind of have that end-of-the-season wrap-up, I think you're going to be pretty happy, right? I mean, he's said before, he told his senior leadership, of which they have a lot of there on the Tate High School football team from this past season, their goal was to get to the postseason. That was that next step that he wanted them to take. And they did that. And that's the thing about Coach Summerford. He's that type of coach. He's very detail-oriented. He's going to come into a season. He's going to have goals. He's going to have things set and ready to go. And the one thing in covering high school football in this area, especially covering Rhett Summerford coach teams, whether it's West Florida when he was there or now at Tate, they are going to meet those goals. So keep an eye on Tate as they continue to grow, as Coach Summerford continues to put this program back where it knows it should be and where it belongs, and that is one of the top programs in this entire area, maybe even in the entire state of Florida. So just keep an eye on these guys. They are going to have some young faces next year, so we'll see if that causes any kind of setbacks or not. But like I said, usually when Coach Summerford sets a goal and a plan for his teams, they reach them. And they did that this year by making it to the postseason. So, again, congratulations to Tate. Congratulations to Nice. My goodness, Nice. That is a unit of a football team down there in Jacksonville. And I said it on the ESPN Pensacola social media pages after the game. If Nice does not win the 6A state championship, they either tripped up somewhere along the way or they were robbed. Because that is a very, very good football team. Maddox Spencer at the receiver position, every bit the stud that is advertised. Harry at the quarterback, Perry at the running back position. They've got a lot of weapons. They've got a lot of talent. And that is a well-coached football team. And I am very curious to continue to keep an eye on them and see just how far they go in the FHSAA playoffs. Because like I was saying, they are a very good football team, and they got a solid chance at winning the 6A state championship. So I will be definitely keeping an eye on them for sure after seeing them in person. It's the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Moving now to college football. It's some great games over the weekend, a couple of surprises, some games that were a little closer than you expected them to be. We'll start in Gainesville as the Gators eliminate LSU from both SEC championship contention and the college football playoff contention, giving LSU their fourth loss on the season. Garrett Nussmeier, 27 of 47, 260 yards and a touchdown in this game. The story revolves around him, but it's not his numbers. We'll get to that in just a second. On the other side, DJ Lagway, 13 of 26, 226 yards and a passing touchdown. Florida's defense, as good as DJ Lagway played, as some of the throws he made were just absolutely to step up in the pocket and have an offensive lineman right in front of you to where you can't step into the throw and you still drop the dime into the bucket for it to be a first and goal situation to DK on the 2-yard line. That's impressive. And the fact that he's doing that as a true freshman. DJ Lagway is going to be special at Florida. We can see that already. If he can stay healthy, if he can continue to develop, DJ Lagway is going to be something special. This defense for Florida has really turned the corner the last few weeks of the season. And it was very evident this past Saturday. LSU coming into this game had given up 6 sacks. They gave up 7 alone on Saturday night. 7 sacks on Saturday night. And that's really the key to this game, was that Garrett Nussmeier was uncomfortable in the pocket. And to be honest, he was a little banged up as well, because there was one time where he gets the ball stripped on a potential strip sack. He goes to dive on it and gets his arm and his shoulder kind of caught up in the pile, and you see him pull his arm out, and he's just not the same after that. This pressure that Florida was putting on Garrett Nussmeier, they did their homework, and they found out that Garrett Nussmeier is not good against pressure, right? I bet they watched the Alabama game. I bet they went back and watched the other two games that LSU had lost this season with USC. And they saw that when you put pressure on Garrett Nussmeier, he's not as efficient if you just let him stand back there and throw the football. When he's got to roll out of the pocket and he's got to make decisions and keep his eyes downfield, his decision-making is not as good as if he's got a clean pocket. And Florida definitely took advantage of that for sure. I want to give a shout-out to Jacoby Jackson, a Pensacola Catholic alumni playing running back for Florida. Actually scored one of the touchdowns for the Gators, so shout-out to Jacoby. He's been solid for them the last few weeks. I mean, he's kind of really stepped up. Montrell Johnson been out with an injury, been banged up. And Jacoby, it's really kind of been Jacoby Jackson and Ball. Those have been the two guys that have really kind of stepped up and played really well for Florida at the running back position. So shout out to Jacoby Jackson, product of Pensacola Catholic right here in our own backyard. As far as LSU, Brian Kelly started the month of November off after they won their final game in October. He came in the locker room and he made this comment. To his team, he said, "October is for pretenders. November is for contenders." Since making that comment, LSU is 0-3 in the month of November. So I think it's safe to say LSU is a pretender, not a contender. And they've got a lot, and I mean a lot, of problems right now. You've got Brian Kelly yelling at coaches on the sideline. You've got players yelling at Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's yelling back at the players. They are just not on the same page right now. Like I was talking about the Ice Flyers a minute ago, how it's just hard to work together and gel as a team when you're going up against so much adversity. That's where LSU's at right now too. It's hard for them to stay locked in when they're going through so much stuff. When you get blown out by Alabama at home in front of your own fans, and then you go on the road to take on a below 500 Florida Gator football team that you're favored to beat. Most everybody on all the shows pick you to beat them. You should beat them. Heck, you should beat them by a couple of scores probably. And then they beat you by a couple of scores. There's frustration there. So there's a lot of issues that Brian Kelly, and he talked about it after the game. He said, "I got to be more hands-on." I think maybe he had backed off and let his coaches kind of handle things, let them handle their position meetings and things like that. And that's not going to be happening anymore from what it sounds like in Baton Rouge. Brian Kelly saying he's got to be more hands-on after three straight losses there for the Tigers and them essentially getting eliminated from SEC Conference Championship and the college football playoff spot. You're listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Another surprise game over the weekend. Oregon struggling to win, right? I referenced the comedian Funny Man a couple of times on the show. The guy does the Alabama videos. He's an Alabama fan, and he does kind of like Alabama fans watching the college football Saturday. He likes to say struggle win. This is a struggle win. As a matter of fact, I think in his video this past weekend, he did the struggle win chant that he does for this game. Dylan Gabriel, 22 of 31, 218 yards, threw a pick. Braden Locke, 12 of 28, 96 yards, a touchdown and an interception. Oregon's defense won them this game because their offense was nowhere to be found. But you know what? If you are Coach Lanning and you are the Oregon Ducks, you're looking at this going, you know what? I actually feel a little bit better about our team coming out of this game. And here's why. Here's why. Because I now know that if our offense is struggling, we're known for offense, and that's usually what wins us games. But I now know that if our offense is struggling, our defense can have their back. We can win a game because of our defense. So you got to be happy about the way that game turned out if you're Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks. Yes, you would have loved to have beaten them 61-13 instead of 16-13, but the fact of the matter is you still won the game. You're still going to probably be the number one team in the country. and you learned about your team. You learned that under pressure and in a game like that and in situations like that, when they have to go against adversity, they are going to be able to still battle through and pull out a win. And you learned that your defense can help you win football games. You got a lot to be happy about if you're the Oregon Ducks right now. I know coming off of that win, you're not going to be happy about the final score and the way it looked. You're not going to get the ooh-ah style points. But you're still going to get the win. Still going to get the win. Ask BYU if they would rather have had 17-13 loss like they had, or would they have rather struggled and pulled out a 20-17 win? What do you think they're going to say? Oh, they would have rather had the struggle win, because you still win the game. You learn lessons. Championship teams, they have to go through these games. It's just a part of going on a championship run. And I'm not saying the Oregon Ducks are going to win the national title. I'm just saying teams that usually do will have one or two games like this during the season where they have to dig deep and they have to find a way to win because their game plan just isn't working. And it doesn't matter what they try to do to shake things up, that just doesn't work. So Oregon, big win for them. Some other games from around the SEC. Real quick before we go to break, Texas, they survive Arkansas. This game was 13-10 into the fourth quarter. Texas gets a late touchdown to win that one 20-10 there again. Another game, just like with Oregon, Texas has got to be happy with the outcome of this because their defense won it. Last week, their offense beat Florida. This week, their defense beat Arkansas. Shows just how complete of a team the Longhorns are. Georgia bouncing back after a ugly loss on the road against Ole Miss a week ago. They get the 31-17 shocker win over Tennessee. It's a shocking win because it was that much of a differential. Had this been 31-27, I don't think a lot of people would have been as shocked, but 31-17, that caught some people off guard. Carson Beck in this game, 24-40, 347 yards, two touchdowns through the air and one on the ground. Carson Beck looked exactly like what we expected Carson Beck to look like heading into this season. So, big win there for the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll take our final time, or excuse me, not our final timeout. We'll take another timeout when we come back. More of the Glass Half Full right after this.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas. So how do you know which games we're carrying? Easy. Just follow us on Facebook / ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola, all sports, all the time.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Monday morning, 9:44 here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now joined by a voice you may actually hear on our sister station, News Radio 92.3, Bobby Rossi joining us. And Bobby, first and foremost, man, thanks for joining the show today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I hear
– football.
Yeah, you're going to talk some football. I hear a little birdie told me that you were actually at the BYU game on Saturday night.
So, yeah, I wanted this team that's getting all the buzz and everybody is excited about. And honestly, I think the result of that game is something that a lot of us were kind of waiting for, which is the bubble to burst. And so they played a Kansas team that was healthy and ended up, you know, they've had some good challenges in the past. And or they count other good past, even though they haven't won. And they finally knocked off BYU. And I don't think a lot of people are surprised. You've seen BYU tumble in the polls after that. I think a lot of people are actually expecting the same thing to happen to Indiana this week against Ohio State. Like those two teams, Indiana and BYU, people are just like, hey, they're having this outstanding season that were completely unexpected. But when is the bubble going to burst? When is the luck going to run out? And for BYU on Saturday night, it did run out. We'll see whether it runs out for Indiana this weekend.
Yeah, that is definitely going to be a good game. And, I mean, for the Jayhawks in that game, I mean, they're a team that they've already caused a little bit of chaos in college football. They knocked off Iowa State the week before. So they are a team that they've been there before. They've done that before. So, again, one of those teams that kind of the conversation around Kansas is maybe a little bit better than that record at 3-7. Maybe that's a little bit better than that looks on paper, especially with the last couple of wins for them. But I want to move on away from that game. I want to talk, obviously, this is a big SEC area here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I want to talk, obviously, LSU eliminated from SEC Conference Championship contention. But what are those teams?
Yeah.
We got Texas, we got Texas A&M, we've got Georgia, Tennessee, Bama, and Ole Miss pretty much left. That's our teams that are in the race now these last couple of weeks. Obviously, we've got games like Texas, Texas A&M that are it's going to happen in a couple of weeks. Bama, Tennessee has already happened. Georgia, Tennessee has already happened. So we've got tiebreakers. But where do you see, when you look at the landscape of the SEC right now, who do you think is going to be those final two teams that gets to Atlanta?
Well, I think number one, I've been saying for weeks now, I think this is Texas's year to get back to the national championship game. And I think that's lining up. When you saw how they played against Arkansas last weekend, you know, Arkansas treated this like a rivalry game. They stepped up and they were doing things that, you know, when you have rivalry games, like all bets are off the table. You could be the worst team in the NCAA that year. You're playing the best team in the NCAA that year. Then when it's a rivalry game, all bets are off. Crazy things happen, and that's how Arkansas treated that game. And Texas still came through. They were just sharp, and they were able to get things done late in the game. And I think that shows that they're going to continue to kind of go that route. And so I definitely see Texas being in the SEC championship game, and eventually I see them going through the college football playoffs and being in the national championship game. As far as the other teams go, I mean, I was really expecting Georgia to be that team. And they've just struggled with, you know, these two losses and everything like that. And so now that LSU's gone, I didn't think LSU was going to make it that far. So that was not a big surprise to me to see them get knocked off. I feel like they also were just kind of getting good breaks and things like that as well.
You're listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Talking with Bobby Rossi about a little college, a little NFL, a little bit of everything having to do with football. Before we actually transition to the NFL, Bobby, real quick, Colorado, they are a team that is kind of they're flying under the radar right now because I think in the Big 12, a lot of people were looking at BYU as an undefeated team. Now that BYU has fallen, BYU is still kind of in that top spot, so it's BYU and Colorado for the Big 12 championship game if it was to happen today, right now. Is Colorado a serious contender, not only for the Big 12 championship, but a national championship as well? Because a lot of people kind of look at their schedule, not necessarily the strongest schedule, playing only one currently ranked team on the season so far. Do you feel like Colorado is one of those teams that if they get into the playoffs, they could actually make a deep run?
Yeah, I think they'd make a deeper run than BYU would. In fact, I was even saying in the Big 12 championship game, I would see Colorado knocking off BYU. So I thought even if BYU, you know, beat Kansas and wins next week, I saw them losing to Colorado in the Big 12 championship game. And so I do see Colorado being good. Now, here's the thing. I don't think any of them are as good as Texas, though. I don't even think they're as good as the Big 12. Even if that's Indiana. So I don't see them going that far yet. But I think both programs, BYU and Colorado, have made dramatic improvements this year compared to last year. And hopefully they can keep building on those improvements and be powerhouse on the road. But I don't think this is the year. I think people are jumping the gun on thinking, hey, these teams have made it.
Now, Bobby, transitioning now from college to the NFL, taking a look at yesterday in the NFL, a little bit of a surprising day at certain areas. I think I was a little surprised at how the Falcons just underperformed on the road against the Broncos. Also, the Chiefs getting their first loss. What are some of the things that you saw yesterday in the NFL that really stood out to you?
Well, one locally here, the New Orleans Taysom Hills. I mean, like, what the heck? That game was freaking amazing. It was disappointing to see him throw an interception and then later fumble the ball. But at the same time, just and I actually wondered, so Dennis Allen was not really a big Taysom Hill fan. And that's when he got reduced from being the backup quarterback to now you're tight end. And we did see him involved with the offense a lot, but not as much as he was even before Dennis Allen came in. Then Clint Kubiak comes in, involve Taysom Hill, if you watch New Orleans Saints, you've seen them perform in a way where, or basically, if you've seen them this year, when Taysom Hill's in the game, even if he doesn't have the ball, they do much, much better on offense. The blocks he makes for Alvin Kamara have often sprung Alvin Kamara for big runs. He has a better feel for what blocks need to happen compared to what we've seen other running backs and tight ends. And so when he's been hurt, the whole offense has hurt. And now that Dennis Allen's gone, I wondered if now interim coach was going to involve him more, because the interim coach has always been a Taysom Hill fan. He's the special teams guy. When Taysom Hill went to special teams, he's the guy that started making Taysom Hill return kickoffs and obviously go for punt blocks and things like that. And that's kind of how Taysom made the team at first. And so I wondered if he's going to involve him more. Last week he wasn't that much more involved, but this week obviously he was. They tried to have him in so many different areas, and at least for this week it paid off. And so, yeah, that was one of the big surprises. The other one, I think not a surprise, but it was nice to see Buffalo Bills actually standing up to the Kansas City Chiefs and knocking off the Kansas City Chiefs last night or yesterday. I thought that was a good battle. I think it might be a preview for the AFC Championship game. I don't know if it'll go the same way in the AFC Championship game, but it still was nice to see these two powerhouses going against each other and watching how Josh Allen ended up handling the pressure against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Bobby Rossi joining us here on The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of the show, you can definitely do that. 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. Bobby, before we let you go, going to get a prediction for you tonight. Got Houston at Dallas, Monday Night Football, that you can hear right here on ESPN Pensacola.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a Texans game right there. Without Dak Prescott, they are just not the same team. And we saw that last week. Some teams are fortunate. When the starting quarterback goes down, they've got a very qualified and effective backup quarterback. That is not the case with the Dallas Cowboys. And yet, at the same time, the Texans are playing pretty good right now. And so, this is definitely going to be a Texans game. In fact, I see them going up by 2 touchdowns.
Well, hey, Bobby, we appreciate you taking time out of your morning to join us here on The Glass Half Full. Man, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, so we're going to take a quick time out. Once again, thank you, Bobby, for joining us. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. It'll be time for your headline roundup right here on The Glass Half Full right after this.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. So whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunities.
The Rich Eisen Show, on weekdays after Greeny, 11 to 2, on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
And we are back, closing it out here on a Monday morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Glass Half Full. It is time for your headline roundup. As we take a look at all the top headlines happening in the world of sports, starting out, obviously, Mahomes and the Chiefs, they dropped their first loss of the season yesterday against the Buffalo Bills. Patrick Mahomes said in the post-game presser, they're going to use this as fuel for the remainder of the season. Chargers survive a Bengals second-half comeback. Bengals an opportunity to win this game. Two different opportunities for Evan McPherson to put a field goal through the uprights. Misses both of them, a 48 and a 51 yarder, and the Chargers end up scoring a late touchdown to win this one 34-27. 49ers frustrated as they lose another game late in regulation to the Seahawks, 20-17 the final score there. Matt Eberflus, the head coach of the Chicago Bears for now, defends his decision to not run another play there, try to get some extra yardage for his kicker. Obviously, they were going for a long field goal there to win, to beat the Packers. It's a long field goal, so the trajectory has got to be low. Yeah, you guessed it. You know what happened. It got blocked. The Packers ended up winning that game. The Cavs rest Donovan Mitchell, but it doesn't matter. They still end up going 15-0. Kudos to them. Second best start in NBA history behind the 2015-2016 Warriors, who started 24-0. And James Harden passes Ray Allen for second on the NBA's all-time three-pointers list Sunday night against the Jazz. My prediction for tonight's Monday Night Football game, Texans 31, Cowboys 14. We'll talk about it tomorrow right here on the Glass Half Full. Greeny coming up next.